This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello everybody, Chris here. Just a reminder that this episode was recorded pre-lockdown, back when we could all be in a room together. And second reminder that this season episodes are coming weekly. So today we've got an interview episode and next Thursday we will have Homo Sapiens Extra Lockdown Extended Edition. Enjoy listening. We're really excited because we've got Sue Perkins on the show today.
She's here. She's queer. Get used to it.
Yeah.
It's a very exciting and lovely chat. And it was so funny. I hadn't seen her for absolutely centuries. Like, seriously, since I last saw her, she's become like the queen mum.
Yeah, she
of,
has.
Of Britain, in a way.
And
Stephen Fry was the queen mum for a while. I think Sue's been it for a bit now.
If anyone who goes near Bake Off, you suddenly become royal status.
So wait, I was a bit confused because I'm a bit behind the loop on British culture. Mm-hmm. She used to present Bake Off, and then when it was sold to Channel 4 or something,
she didn't go with.
Why was that? She's fed up of just looking at cakes all the time.
Well, I can't remember if we asked her.
I don't think we did. Should we kind of grazed it, but I felt I didn't.
Being the pithy.
Or, you know, bruised it the way you would bruise
a
cake with a jam. You know, all these programs are basically just Survivor. Mm-hmm. Survivor was the first one, and now like there's drag queen Survivor, there's you know, models Survivor, there's cooking Survivor, now there's cake Survivor.
Well, I was interested actually that Sue was saying that they tried to make it more hijinks when it started, and her and Mel pushed back, and she tells the story
even less cake drama.
Well, she said we're not going to try and get in these people's heads and make them think it's all, you know, we're on the precipice of disaster. This is a nice warm cuddle of a show,
and it's about people making cakes.
Yeah, and I think that I wonder if, you know, in the past 10 years we've got this kind of British thing which is like thrillers around, always centered around like a dead woman or a missing kid, and I feel like it maybe is slightly a response to that. It's just warmth.
Do they have vegan cakes? They do.
I reckon they do.
Yes. Okay, well that's good.
Well look, not that this is this isn't.
Do they have gay people?
Absolutely.
They must do. Who makes cakes in this country?
And also, you know, look,
maybe I'll give it a go.
What, the presenting?
No, I don't think that's ever going to happen.
Yeah, that's not the selection process. You know, this wasn't your interview for Bake Off.
Anyway, but I mean, what I think's interesting about Sue, well, many things, how prolific she is, and also that her openness about having a sort of a midlife crisis this interview. Mm. Very interesting. And talks about her ending a relationship when she was 40. And well, we both talk about our kind of, you know, things about getting older. Of course, you can't take part in that part of the conversation, Christopher, being such a nubile youth.
Blushing.
But I think it's an interesting one about being a woman of a certain age. And I think it's, you know, she's so successful, has all these things going on for her. And yet she's being able to be open about stuff that everybody goes through.
Yeah, she's very open about her messier times and how she's not in control, and as none of us are. But you know,
life is messy.
Life's a real mess.
Life is a mauvais caractère, as Oscar Wilde said. Anyway, shall we have some Agony Uncle questions?
Oh, I think so.
Let's segue onto that. How about this?
Please.
From a woman. Best friends just became a whole lot more. Any advice?
Ooh.
Well, isn't that exciting? Oh, we didn't do the jingle.
Oh, yeah.
Agony uncles.
Oh, sorry.
Agony uncles.
Me.
So, from a woman, best friends just became a whole lot more. Any advice? What do you think? Have you ever had that happen to you, Christopher?
Has a friend ever turned into... Me and my best friend, who's probably listening because she listens, when we were younger, we used to try and...
Get it on.
Sort of pretend that we were like, oh, let's be boyfriend and girlfriend. And like, we snogged loads. But I wasn't cutting the mustard for me. Or her, in fact. I think we were just young and experimenting.
Right.
But I've
had sex with loads of my friends.
Have you?
Yeah. Over the years.
And has... Tell me more about that.
Well, I'm friends with people that I've had sex with in the past. Maybe that's a more accurate way to do it.
Right.
Like, it's not like I have a friend and then... It's not like I have friends now and, like, all of a sudden, oops, you know, we're shagging. No, I mean, like, I've had sex with people. Maybe they've been my friend. Then we had sex and then they stay as my friend.
Yes.
A lot of people. Like, most of the people I know.
Do you think... Next time I come for dinner, there'll be a whole new...
You've probably met a few of them.
It's never turned into... I've never had friends turn into it... except, and so...
But how do you imagine that would... I always think, well, great, because at least you know you like each other and you know that you get on.
I also think it's interesting what you're saying. It's like, that doesn't mean the end of a friendship. Maybe it'll go back to being just friends.
Yeah.
My dad was friends with all his ex-girlfriends. Like, my godmother is one of my dad's ex-girlfriends.
That's nice.
Yeah.
I think it makes sense if you've had an intimacy with people and a friendship in that way. And also, I have to say, I really like that, you know, I think sex, intimacy in that kind of way, is something that, it's lovely to sort of have that be a part of your friendship.
Yeah. You know
what I mean? It's not something sordid or embarrassing or awkward. For me, it's something like, yeah, we've had really beautiful times, you know? And that's something as an added sort of part of the richness of your friendship.
Yeah, and also, like, I've always felt whenever I have entered into, like, a romantic thing with someone, it's not really within my control. Attraction is attraction, and it comes out of nowhere.
I agree.
So if it's happening, let it happen.
Let it happen.
Enjoy it.
I think what we're saying to this lovely lady is go for it.
Just go for it.
Give it. What can you do? I mean, because actually, you're powerless.
Yeah, and keep
you're
us
powerless.
Keep
and
us posted.
Keep us posted. But I bet I see good things. Because also, if you know the person really well, then you know what they're going to be like. Perhaps you might know their flaws. You might know how they're going. You know, they might know their anxieties. You've got a heads up on everything. Mm. I actually think it's really great. I think more people should do this.
Yes.
And then have a vodka soda and a Valium.
Yeah.
and hit the sack.
We need to get to a place where that becomes a t-shirt.
Yes.
I think this is a great one, actually.
Okay, go
because
ahead.
Because it's about more than the question, I think. It says, how to start acting in your mid-20s with no previous experience. Now, I think the reason I think this is a fascinating question is I think that a lot of people think you can't change things in your life after 23. You know, because we all want to success and everything now.
Yes.
And I think if you want to do something, no matter what age, you've got to do it.
Absolutely. Right? I mean, I think I always say that to people, like, do you want to have a life that is defined by what if?
Yeah.
Do you want to just have a go at it? And if you don't, if it doesn't go the way you want, then do something else. But don't do a what if, or I only wish I'd tried, you know. Don't. Life's too short. Fucking do it. And also, you know, when I was 17, I went to drama school. A man who was the year above me in second year was 46 years old. He's my dear friend called Ralph. And he was an upholsterer and everything.
Have you had sex with him?
No. And then he went to drama school and, you know, reinvented himself and then became an actor. A professional actor. And I think that was and also it was like having your dad at drama school. Cause if you missed a class, like in the mornings, if you missed your movement class or something, he would go, you'd be in the pub and he would go, someone say, oh, Ralph wants to talk to you. And you go, oh, and he'd go over and he'd be going, Alan Cumming, with a pint of lager. Alan Cumming, I heard you slept in for your movement class. Do you know how many people would like this place at drama school? And you're wasting it. Don't you dare. And you go, sorry, Ralph, I'll be on time. So he kept us all in line. Anyway, Ralph is a role model because he completely changed everything in his life. And I think that it's never too late to do anything. I feel I'm going to change my life. Like next year, I'm going to become a dancer.
You're going to do a dance.
I'm going to do a dance piece. That's a sort of similar thing. You can do it. Who knows?
And I think you have to. I think we all kind of forget that like these things are very frightening and very hard work, and that's okay. That doesn't mean you've made the wrong decision. It just means that's what it takes.
Yeah,
wouldn't you say?
So yeah. So
please start acting. You're in your mid-20s. All we ask for is that when you get your first Tony, you thank us in the speech.
Or you're Olivier.
Olivier.
You know what? It says how to start acting in your mid-20s with no previous experience. Like half of Hollywood has no experience.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, the experience
matters. And they're
getting
great work.
Yeah. And look, the President of the United States has no fucking experience. And look how well he's doing. So, anyway, blah, blah. I just mean the experience part is not something to be intimidated by.
Very true.
All right, that was...
There's one more.
I think you're very
well placed to deal with that.
What is it?
How do you deal with an angry person?
I would say, from experience, that you first of all have to realize that you cannot fix them. You cannot make them not angry.
Let me grab a pen. Hang on.
Uh-huh. That's the biggest thing that I have taken away from decades of therapy and from having had an angry parent and had some angry partners, which of course is something that happens when you haven't quite got yourself sorted out. You seek the familiar in your lovers to something that was sort of difficult for you in your childhood. So I think the biggest thing is to realize that you can't fix them. Mm-hmm. You can only hope that and guide them towards them wanting to fix themselves.
Yes. Very true. And I think what about in the moment, like if someone's going nuts?
Oh, well, you know, it's funny. Grant, my husband, teaches at this school and they got sort of a class on how to deal when kids freak out.
Ooh.
And he said that the great thing, and he's used it, and I've used it too, it's that if someone's freaking out, mm-hmm. and like I think he used it in on the subway when someone was having a, you know, screaming and furious. I've used it with in a similar situation. If someone's going mental and it fears about something, you just say to them, "What do you need right now?"
Mm.
It engages them. It makes them actually think, "Well, what do I need?" And just that, you know, just stop it for a little second and then get them to engage with you and try and make it better.
Yeah.
So that's I think is excellent advice, and it makes so much sense. It
takes the air
because when someone has lost it. Mm. Asking them what they actually need and what they actually want is such a good thing for them to just consider as well as to sort of stop the...
Yeah, diffuse it immediately.
What do you think, Lala? I think I would like to pick up some chicken bones and give them to all the angry people in the world. That's lovely. Thanks so much. Agony Uncles.
Agony Uncles. We want to say a massive thank you to everyone for writing.
Yes, for sharing your agony and
please keep
for thinking
coming.
Of us as your uncles. Yes. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the lovely and talented and fragrant Sue Perkins.
Yeah.
I found a curious liberation once I'd crossed the threshold.
Of 50, yes.
End of September, I became 50. And for the 6 months before, I was almost entirely unbearable.
Really?
I have classic, you know, lowest grade, entry level sort of midlife crisis.
Really?
Yeah. I wanted to be somebody who just didn't behave the way that everyone else behaved. I wanted to sort of, I'm going to run contrary to the narrative. Nope, I just suckered straight into that. What am I for? What am I about?
Really?
Oh, yeah. And then I had a party, got hammered. Couldn't give a shit after that. It's absolutely like business as usual. Really? Trot on.
Nothing seems as bad as it seems.
Yes,
before.
It's like, it was the apprehension of, and yeah. I don't know, culturally maybe we're sort of hardwired to sort of reflect at these big moments.
I think birthdays with a zero on the end are by their very nature contemplative, mm-hmm. and sort of, you know, probing. Yes. And they should, I think it's a good thing to do that every now and
why
then
not?
In your life.
A stock take. Did you probe 50?
Oh, we big time.
I would hope so. It would have been a great loss if you hadn't.
I probe as often as I can.
What do you think it is that brings you to a crisis? I never...
I don't think normally I'd have one. I think it is exactly that, the sort of cultural, the cultural pressures, the subconscious cultural pressures to examine on birthdays with a knot at the end.
Yeah, I agree.
And we're like sheep, well, lemmings or whatever the appropriate animal would be. We just follow, you know, however countercultural I wish to be and exciting and off the beaten track. Nope, I just plumb fell into it.
What did you do at 40?
Another one of those cry. I remember, I sort of detonated my life at 40, walked out of a big relationship rather stupidly, and then just remember wandering very drunk on the heath at around about 5 in the morning and encountering a hedgehog and cradling it like a newborn.
Really?
Yeah, in a slightly altered state. Yeah, just stepped out. Just, it was just
slowly singing happy birthday to yourself.
I thought you were going to see something else.
They were cradle a hedgehog.
Absent heath and near
5 a.m.
I mean, that would have been interesting. And I would have still sold that story. 30, yeah, same. They've all been big sort of seismic. Almost like I feel I should, even if big things aren't naturally evolving, I feel I should, something seismic should be
fixed. I totally agree. And you said, do you regret leaving a relationship when you're 40?
Yeah, leaving it in that manner. I think, you know, certainly. I think you know, often things end, but you can manage a better ending than I managed.
Did you just like freak out and walk away?
Yeah, I just think so. I just wanted.
Did you feel you behaved a bit badly?
No, I didn't behave particularly badly. No, not like that. Just sort of slightly cavalier with another person's heart. You know, just a bit like, I need to go and do, you know, be somebody else and do some other things. And
are you still friends?
We are.
Well, that's good then.
Yeah. I'm pretty much friends with. I hope to be friends with pretty much everybody. What's the point?
Well, all your exes, you mean?
Yeah, life's too short.
Yeah, I like to be. I have several that I'm very friendly with. There's a couple that are not so good.
Yeah.
Have a religious background?
I was brought up a Catholic.
I knew it.
Yes, it's no great surprise.
No.
So the first time I ever kissed a boy, or kissed anyone, in fact, I was about 7, and it was under an enormous statue of the Virgin Mary.
Oh my God, that's enormous. Great.
I mean, of course, now if I saw it, the scale probably wouldn't be that huge, but it felt enormous.
That's so funny.
And Sister Mary Dorothy was less than pleased. And everything was hugely, just after that happened, somebody cracked their head open. You know, when you're at school, someone, they would always say, they've cracked their head open. It just basically meant they'd fallen.
Yes.
But I had this image that I'd done this thing, and then suddenly someone had fallen, and they'd cracked their, and I imagine their head splitting, like, you know, in like an earthquake situation, or, you know, and this huge because tectonic of plates of the head. The
terrible sinful energy that had emitted from your mouth.
Not because of me and a boy. It wasn't the genesis of gayness, but just like, oh, this is the perfect Catholic storm. This is exactly how you want me to feel. You know, So yeah, I was very early doors, educated by nuns.
Really? Proper old nuns and everything?
Proper old nuns and wimples and everything. And then my dad had been brought up by, I'd been educated by monks, and I came home one day and I was holding my hand and he said, "What's up?" And I said, they smacked my hand because I'm left-handed. And my dad went in and had a word. Because my dad's hands were so gnarled from where he'd been absolutely hammered by. Not for. He was right-handed, but anytime he did something wrong, they'd take the side of a ruler and absolutely go for it on his knuckles, all the kids there. And sort of brutalise them. And I think he was sort of. That was the wake-up call of, I don't want this for my own kids. So I then went to another school shortly after that. But my early genesis was in that sort of.
Talking of Catholicism, I have a confession. When many, many years ago I came on your late lunch show, I said that my friend Sue's cat had died, and you were very nice about it, and she hadn't. I just said that as a joke to make my friend Sue laugh.
Oh, I'm going to have to think about what the penance would be for that.
Yeah. I mean,
this is interesting about penance. Do we have... I wouldn't want violence. For me, the simple question I'd ask at this point would be... The longer that it's taken for you to confess the sin, does the penance augment over time?
Maybe.
So if you'd said that to me a week later, I might have given you a Hail Mary. But now, I mean, we were young.
That was like in the mid-90s.
Yeah, I was super young. You're going to be absolutely hammering that rosary. That's what I'm saying. I think it was a suitable penance. I was nice. At least I was nice.
Yeah, so I said, we were chatting.
This is a story where I don't look bad.
No, not at all. So we're eating the thing. You know, that we'd made, I can't remember what it was, chatting, you know, obviously you were there, you know. And then my friend, and we had this joke, my friend Sue and my friend Andrew and I, we had this joke, because when she had a, She had a cat called Chloe who died, but like 20 years before that. I mean, like when she was like a teenager. Yeah.
Right.
But it was like she was really upset with this. And it was just a joke between Andrew and Sue. Then I came along and I picked it up and we just always said, oh, did Chloe die? I'm so sorry. And like, you know, she was like, stop it. So I knew she was watching. Was it live?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I knew she was watching and I said, oh, can I just, you know, said, thanks very much for coming. I went, oh, can I just say my friend Sue, her cat Chloe died today. So, and you went, oh, Sue, hope you feel better, blah, blah, blah. So, so bratty.
No, it's good.
Was that your big break, you and...
I guess so. And we'd had some little breaks before.
You were a stand-up comedian duo?
Yeah, we did mainly, when we started, we had no, so I met Mel at college and she was doing languages and would sporadically disappear to Bologna to do sort of very intense, you know, sort of workshops in Italian. And then when we both graduated, we couldn't really get any work because the only thing I knew about was Renaissance literature and the only thing she knew about was some really weird sort of oldie worldy Italian shit. So we thought, oh, we'll just do some sketch comedy. And we left it really late to do Edinburgh. So we ended up getting a 10 a.m. slot in a very shit venue, and one person came to see it who didn't take their rucksack off the entire show. They just sat at that angle. Imagine that. So you're just looking at the top of their head doing this sort of
and it's just one person in the audience. Yeah.
And in the middle of it she sort of got out a small map and opened it up to reveal a large map of Edinburgh. I think she realised she was in the wrong venue, folded it up and then just went. So,
My god,
so we did that for a bit and then so we got a bit of traction here and there and we used to do lots of silly voices, so we made a sort of eked out a bit of a living doing
voiceovers
and stuff. And I remember there was one very strange one I did where I was the beginning of video games, early doors, and they just asked me to play a Russian, and this Russian was sort of leather clad, and I had to just do a series of noises of her kicking or being kicked, which out of context sounded pervy and wrong. Sort of, hey, you know, lots of those sort of Tekken kind of noises. And then lots of sort of lingering ones that were just basically sort of just porn. And we got, but our big break, I suppose we had a few bits and bobs.
Well, that was your big break.
Oh, big break first, of course, yes.
Well, no, for us it was, but French and Saunders were really pivotal for us.
Were they?
They were.
We did French and Saunders first.
Yeah, we wrote for them.
I didn't know that.
Oh,
yeah,
I
so
see.
They just saw some claptrap that we'd done on the telly, and it was a character piece, and they liked some of our characters, and they'd seen us in Edinburgh. And they just invited us over one day and said, do you want to write for us? So we wrote.
The 10 o'clock slot, they saw.
No, we graduated to sort of maybe mid-afternoon. Yeah. We were, you
Jennifer
know, riding
Saunders
there.
Never takes her backpack off, turns out.
Never.
Do you game plan in any way, or do you just do what feels good right now? Because between you and Mel, like, do you meet up and say, let's do something together next, or I'm going to do my own thing? Or you just...
No, it's really sort of, again, it's almost that thing of if anyone looks at me twice, if anyone, you know, iconic stuff comes in, and then you think, I think I was so grateful for such a long time I'd do everything, and that leads you to some pretty dark spaces and some creative cul-de-sacs. Mm-hmm. And then the older I've got, I've said the power of no has been very profound.
Mm.
So I actually don't want to do that. I don't want to spend my time doing that. But equally saying yes to things that perhaps would have been very easy passes in my earlier years. Like I do a lot of travelling now, I make a lot of travel docs and I go all the way around the world and see really weird stuff and painful stuff. And I just wouldn't have been ready to do that even 10 years ago, I don't think.
Mm.
Just didn't want to get on a plane, didn't want
to. Do you go to therapy?
Yeah. Every week.
Have you been going for a long time?
Yeah, with the odd break. But I mean, sort of almost consistently for 8 years, I'd say now. I wouldn't be surprised if it's something that I do for the rest of my life.
Oh, I'm totally doing that.
And not because, people say, oh, it's not working then, and I find that really annoying.
I know. No. I hate that. I think therapy is like going to the gym for your mind.
Yeah.
I think everyone should do it.
And also, why would therapy stop when I carry on evolving?
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
When do you stop? When do you stop yearning for... I think that's quite a gay thing, though, a gay psyche, like questing.
What do you think that is?
I don't know. I always... Somebody asked me about it once on stage. I do quite a lot of ad-libby stuff. I improvise a lot and I like it.
Mm.
And I just remember they were saying, what do you think the gay identity is? And I said, I don't really know what you're... It's that spectrum thing we were talking about. There's no such thing, really.
Mm.
But it sometimes for me, it's like you simultaneously want to be the rare butterfly that's outside and is just free and dazzling and kind of curious and undefinable. But then you also want to be inside with everybody else. And you oscillate. The moment I feel accepted and sort of very culturally and sort of it's culturally normal, I want to be transgressive. Part of me wants to be naughty then and transgressive. And then the moment you're transgressive and people, and let's face it, you know, homophobia is on the rise, you know, the moment that starts to kick up again, you want to be inside and you come on, one love, guys, we're all the same. And I don't know if that's just me or if that is part of a more universal sort of sense of
I don't know if you guys feel that, but I do, and I, because today I went back to where I grew up, funnily enough, Southfields near Wimbledon, and I went there, and still in the hairdressers is the photo of this old school hairdressers, is this photo of this guy who was literally part of my sexual awakening. It's like that photo has been there since the 80s.
What?
Of like this guy, I took a photo of it, I'll show you.
That's amazing. He's still there.
He's a big great podcast to you. Like, you're showing the photo.
It's the beauty of radio.
You have to put it on a website or something so people can see
I'll
it.
Yes. Tweet it.
No, let's see it. Let's see it.
I want to see it. But so, isn't that extraordinary? Like, he's frozen in time.
And yeah, so, but I was there and I was like, and what it is, I feel like what the version of what you're saying that I can really relate to is like, I don't want those people to welcome me in because they never welcomed me in. I think that's what I feel. When you're saying that, it's like, I want to be part of this, but actually then when they make you part of it, it's like, actually, no, I don't want to be with you lot. You never let me in before. I'm going to go over there. So I feel like I ping pong back and forth.
Mm. But it's I suppose we cottoned on maybe to identity politics.
Very early on.
Yeah. You know, I didn't experience homophobia. You know what I mean? My family were very liberal, but so much of it was just unspoken, that stuff. It's just like...
But isn't that weird? You just sort of carry, even though you have no experience of homophobia, I didn't have any experience of homophobia, and yet I managed to carry around a very deep shame. Yeah. Where did that come from?
Yeah. Catholic church.
I guess. Although my parents are just so sweet and open-minded and receptive, and anything you want to be is great. Mm. So it didn't come from them. But yeah, maybe you just this sort of sense of...
You've got centuries of stuff that you take
genetic on, sort of shit that you've...
Weird, isn't it?
It is a bit weird. I did have my first sort of homophobic insult in 20 years recently, and I thought, well, I wonder if that's coming back. If
so, what happened?
I was just on the heath, and a guy was just... Call me a bike. I think he said, "You fucking dyke." And I just, in my, you know, that phrase, l'esprit d'escalier, when you something bad happens and you, on the bus on the way home, you think about all the brilliant things you should have said in that moment.
Yes.
I had that very profoundly. So at the time, I just went, I sort of went right up to him and said, "What did you say?" And he sort of postured a bit as if he was going to hit me. It was something almost like an intimation of something physical. And I just thought, I'm going to just stand here. I said, "What did you say?" Really calmly. But I remember my hand was out, so I wanted to keep that distance.
Wow.
If you come within the span of the length of my arm, I know that something really bad's going to happen. And he just sort of buckled a bit. And he said, "Well, I just mean you've got a nice face. Why would you..." I just thought, what's my face got to do with you?
Why would you word?
And then he just said, "I'm just walking my dog and I'm quiet and I'm in a good mood and I've got love for everyone here and you've destroyed that and you can't take that back today." And I went off and I burst into tears. Because it was so shocking and so unusual. I'm so blessed. I never block people on Twitter, never have to. Everyone is kind and courteous, and I absolutely take everybody on board for who they want to be and who they, you know, profess that they are. And just, it had come out of, you know, as I say, it had been decades.
On Hampstead Heath.
And he was sort of loitering by the gents' loos. And it was like, he looked like a sort of, he had sort of reactor-like glasses on. It was like,
really?
The worst part of me wanted to say, if anyone's going to judge anybody on what they're doing and where they are,
sexual,
you know.
Sexual stereotypes.
But I just didn't want to replace knee-jerk unkindness with knee-jerk unkindness. It would have been a poor trade-off for me to make. It just interested me afterwards. And I was so jittery and upset afterwards that maybe it wasn't the first time. Yeah, but I think before it was all under the radar. No one has ever actually said that to me. That's what I thought. At the time, I thought, oh, yeah, that's back again. But no, that was the first time ever. When I was growing up, it was just mutterings and... that it was all quiet and a cultural thing of that's just not quite right. Now it's all
validated,
it's all right, and it's So it takes that kind of harshness to puncture the bubble. Yeah, it was really... But I actually then just felt sad because I was sort of able to kind of deal with it and move on from it. And there are some people who aren't as fortunate as I am to be able to pay for therapy, to be able to live in a nice part of town where you can walk it off with a lovely dog.
Yes.
And I just felt shit about that.
Mm, but it doesn't undermine what happened as well.
No, but
and
that's...
it's great that you spoke out to him because... Yeah, it's really good. Hard in that moment to.
Well, it's interesting what you do in when you. And I felt very threatened by him, but it was more of a. Homophobia aside, it was more of an indicator of what I would do if. Yeah, in an aggressive situation. And I thought I might have to recalibrate that. I don't want to necessarily walk towards angry people again.
I know, I found that in a couple of situations. I thought, what did you do there?
Yeah, you run at
you
it.
You walked, I walked straight into it.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
That's great.
But do you think that's pent up rage in you know, internal, you know, there's things that you're angry about and you're like, I'm not going to stand down.
I think it's also that I think I can fix people who are angry.
Really?
That's my, yeah, that's my thing. I think I can, my father, I felt like I've, you know, a couple of the relationships I've had in my life, I realise are people that I felt familiar with and loved and I were angry and I felt I could fix them. I can make them happy.
Did you have any success?
No, with none of those people. And yeah. But I had success in that I recognised a pattern and I stopped doing it. Mm. Well, with people that I stopped doing it with people that I was, you know, living with. I occasionally now I realise with friends and things, I think, oh, I see. Oh, I've got to back away from this. I'm not, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Situations like that are...
They're very hard to walk away from, in those situations where...
It takes a while, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I've been in some of those situations and then I've gone away and talked about it. You know, what's come back out of an hour talking about it is you're very visible in those moments. Mm. You're very alive in bad relationships. You're very, very alive indeed. You're very seen, you're very present, you're very... But it's not good. you have to remove yourself, even as you know. Drama makes you very, always exciting in the moment, and it's so exhausting over time. Exhausting.
Do you see it for what it is in the moment if you're in one of those relationships?
I think at the time, I was much younger. No. I mean, now, I mean, I just would avoid all of that.
Oh, yeah.
Drama is, I just have no interest in it. I'd like to write it. I'd like to be involved in the world where you create it as, you know, kind of...
I'm always amazed by how altered I seem looking back at some of those relationships, you know, I was so in the thrall of someone. I was so out of control of my own control. I find that fascinating. And also being back here in London,
yeah,
it's great.
Is that the scene of the crimes? You were rampaging around.
Yes. Yeah. And so just, you know, just actually very close to where I'm working and living right now. It's very eerie. Actually,
I wonder if you can ever go back. I always say this when I think about going back to college. I might meet myself on a street corner, not literally, obviously, but just I might, bits of the person I was then might seep into my consciousness. And sometimes that's a brilliant idea because I'd be young and silly and carefree, but I'd also be stupid and feckless and so self-defeating, and I'd be angry to be back there again. So it's weird, isn't it, when you, like you were saying, you go to the hairdressers and you have to confront the painful reality of this permafrosted god that you fell in love with on a fucking window, and you know, I'm haring around town, and I'm like, yeah, you are meeting yourself in a way, but you're able to distance who you are now from that person.
Did you said you were talking about kids. Is that because you do some mentoring or something, or was I getting the wrong end of the stick?
No, I do, yeah. Not officially. I just kind of, I'm just the sort of every aunt that's just right. there. There was a sort of marvellous party a friend of mine had. I was pretty hammered, and I thought, right, well, I need to just go in. For some reason, I thought I need to go into my car. Not to drive it, because it was past that point. I need to just be in the car in the quiet and just have a word with myself and sober up so they can then return and dance, because I love dancing.
Oh, me too.
And two of the kids, sort of 13 and 14, just sort of snuck into the back of the car, and they went, Perks, and of course we're Perks, we need to talk to you. And I went, that's great. What do you need to say? And it was like, we're pansexual. And I said, I love that. I'm really drunk. I need to leave the vehicle because this is not the way I wish to remember me. And they just toddled off. And that's all they wanted to say. They were pansexual.
So cute.
And I just thought, it's great. I don't even want to give that more weight than just, that's wonderful.
Yeah. No, isn't that lovely?
It's nice and to be able to share it with someone who you know is just going to get it. You know, it's really
yeah, well,
important.
I just, I've always been like that. Before all of the identity politics maelstrom, I've always just thought, it's not ever beholden to me to define who somebody else is. Mm. Or to control their perception of their self. Or their trajectory in life. You could come and say you were anything and you want to do anything, and I'd go, that's just knockout.
Yeah.
It doesn't take anything from me for you to be who you are.
Yeah.
And why is it any more complicated than that for anybody? I just don't understand it.
I don't understand what anyone's sexual preferences have to bear on anybody else.
Mm. I know.
Or you know, or how they see themselves, or what, you know, exactly their place in the world. It's such a... God, it's weird that you'd take against, isn't it? Mm. So much effort.
Mm.
So much effort to prescribe somebody else's shit.
It's just a lot of effort and energy you didn't need to expend.
I'm actually like, just, you know, occasionally there'll be kids that come round and they'll sort of loiter, you know, I'll be cooking or something and they'll just hang about. And I know really, they might not even want to say something. They might not want to define who they are. They just want to be around somebody who's a bit different from their parents.
Right, yeah.
And just have that energy for a bit.
Yeah.
And I'm also very childish, you know, I don't have a great deal of responsibility in life and I just prick about. And I have very few boundaries. So I'm like, yeah, what do you want to do? Yeah, that's great. I'm not a parent. Oh, of course, we must let off fireworks now. Yeah. I don't care because
it's not. You have a trampoline.
I have a trampoline too.
Yeah. I knew you would have a trampoline.
I rebranded as a rebounder. You know that the Americans call them rebounders.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, you can say, I mean, it's basically an adult, slightly highly strung adult trumpet. But the idea is that, the connotation of that is its fitness.
Oh, I see. Oh, yeah, I see what you mean.
But no, it's just so you can fling yourself into the air. And also what's great about trampolining, and I can't believe more people haven't got into this, is you can have one and it's basically the only legal way you can spy on a neighbour. So you can just basically, hey, they're in. And you can just, both sides, you can see what's going on, who's shagging who.
Yes. But you burn more calories on a trampoline than running.
Oh, it's so, true. Oh, I go on my trampoline for like a minute and a half, I'm like, whoop.
Oh, you're pooped. You try star jumping on that, you are neat within 30 seconds.
Or,
the
do you?
I can do
so have you got one that's got a sort of netting around it?
No, it's like that. It's a big one like that, but it just don't have the netting.
Yeah, same.
Because that's the kind of guy I am.
I would shit myself with
it. Also, children, or some have children go on it, but it's not.
I'd let
you know, if I had children or if more children. I mean, it's, no, we don't have netting. I don't know why I'm trying to justify we don't
that's
have netting.
That's hardcore.
Do you know, it's funny that, because this Christmas I had to do, because you have family around and lots of different people you don't see that much all gather together, I felt like I was the spokesman for identity politics. They were like, so what is this pansexual? I need to know.
Yes.
And what is they?
What is non-binary?
What is, you know, and what is non-binary and is it the same as this? And you know, and I was like, okay, everybody one at a time, okay? Take a ticket and I'll answer your question.
And you sort of, I get that a lot. It's like, I don't want to be the person that defining what those things mean feels slightly wrong.
Big responsibility.
If they want to say they're not, but let them, the person who's non-binary, define it for you, not somebody who
ask them.
Is
exactly
a woman.
I said.
And that's how I define myself. So I don't wish to speak for that community. I don't want to speak for anybody apart from myself.
But they, you know, because they said, so what is this person? I said, just ask them. They were like, okay. And then the one thing that I thought
just go and ask the questions.
I found really useful was, everyone was like, so what, I have to call someone they? I mean, that's not even grammatically correct. Blah, blah, blah. And
God.
I said, so think about it like this. if you have a friend who is coming for dinner and they are bringing a friend, but you don't know whether, you don't know who it is, so you don't know if it's a boy or a girl, you happily use they. You go, do they eat cheese? Are they vegan? Like, you know,
yeah.
That's...
In the same way that when people dance around their sexualities, they use a gender-neutral pronoun. Yeah. And it's completely... It's a way that most people, like, sort of coped early doors.
Yeah.
By
yeah.
fudging with a gender-neutral.
Yeah, that's so true.
So it's...
You've been doing it. You know, that was... And everyone
yes.
was,
yeah.
Oh, okay.
For generations, it's been being done.
But
and
that's so true about the... fudging thing, but that's yeah. that's how you would do it.
Like partner, I hate partner.
Do you?
Partner. Yeah,
I actually. Really...
I think it, because I think it, I think it's a it's got for me it has a leftover from a fudgy time where you would say my partner and you wouldn't have to define the sex and it also seems to me like well are they do you like are you in a business together or are you fucking...
I get that. I mean, I wouldn't refer to my
partner.
My a girlfriend as partner, but I, do you know what, I love it when straight people do. I think it's I find
yes.
that a very inclusive, wonderful
that,
way
yeah.
of
about your partner or theirs.
Oh, just no. there. They refer to their.
Oh right, yeah.
Like, yeah, I like it when
straight,
I understand what you mean.
Straight,
when straight
friends
do
of mine
it
refer
their,
to their husbands as their partner. I think that's a deeply
it's opening up.
Yeah,
to not being yes. Well, it's opening up to not being what we used to use it for.
Yeah.
Yeah,
right, totally.
And I might not wish to define my girlfriend in that way, but it's like.
How do you feel about girlfriend? Like
it,
boyfriend?
It feels a little infantilized.
Infantilizing, yes.
Mm. I just think the name is fine. I just think, but also I don't necessarily wish them to have to be defined in relation to me. They are their own.
Mm-hmm.
As you say, Grant.
Mm. Yeah.
He's Grant, and
yeah. I say my
just,
I say my husband. He's my husband. But
yes.
I also like my man. I call him my man.
Yes.
Yeah, I notice you. You asked me about William, my husband. You said your man. It's nice. It kind of feels.
It
like
is really nice. My woman, of course,
love.
Has very different. Horribly appropriate. Yes, mm. So we'd never be able to, in any way, do that because it feels like.
What does it feel like?
Well, it just feels like they're my possession. Of course, it's much more. It's for women. That's much more of a hot potato. You know, I don't want to be anybody's woman. It just feels
right.
So much baggage with that.
Yeah, so ownership like, and. Mm. Yeah.
Interesting,
it was
isn't it?
God. Yeah, it was always like how, because George Michael in the Daily Mail always had lovers, not boyfriends. It's like, why is he a lover? Why can't he just be his boyfriend?
But they were always trying to make out the lifestyle element, you know, that it was also
seedy.
Love, exactly.
Seedy.
It's sort of, that there could be no emotional. But I guess that's something that gay men sort of suffer from a lot, is that your identity is often seen by certain sections of the media as, you know, it's all sexualized, it's all about sex.
Totally.
Sex. Mm. And it must be, whereas I suppose for women it's all about emotions, drama, you know. Mm. And of course we have a lot of sex and you have a lot of emotion and it's like, that there often feels like, are them and us thing going on even in the gay community?
Yes.
It's weird.
Fascinating.
Do you feel that is for gay women, that it is about the emotion? Is that the sort of headline?
Well, that's somebody else's headline. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, I've had relationships which are extremely emotionally sort of connected and simpatico, and ones that have just been driven by lust and by, and you in the cold light of day, you think, oh, I don't know that we have shared values.
Mm.
But sometimes shared values... No, I just want... Oh, yeah, exactly. Who wants to... What's more interesting, to discuss shared values or just, oh, my God, look at you, and then...
Yeah.
So it's and
like,
yeah,
so you communicate... I've done that, where the only way you actually communicate is by sex.
The litmus test was always for me, would I be happy to bump into a friend with them? That's when I knew if I liked them or if it was just sex. If we're walking down the street and you bump into a friend, you'd be like, oh, this is Dorador. If you're a bit like, I don't want you to enter my actual world.
Oh, no. Yeah. Well, I think you can still... I've had the ones where it completely enters my world and I still could only communicate by sex.
Well,
it's short-lived, thankfully.
Yeah.
But I guess those things can only be short-lived because, you know, after a while, you need to be able to communicate in other ways than just sex.
But the difference is...
Because there's a limited alphabet.
A limited palette alphabet. Yeah. But also, I'm sometimes deeply envious of... maybe this again is I don't want to sell men short and their complex needs and desires, but women just produce so much oxytocin when we have sex that you just... We're slaves to our hormones. Mm. I mean, you're slaves perhaps to your own set of hormones, but we want to... Our biological imperative is... I'm just really like you now because we've shared some fluids and you find yourself being pulled even towards people that aren't right for you through a hormonal affiliation. Mm. Whereas I've always been slightly envious of sort of gay male friends of mine who've just gone, they're great and we have sex and we have a laugh and then I don't see them.
See you on campus. Mm.
And then you can take your time in that environment where you aren't overwhelmed by love hormones to work out whether they're really right.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
Mm. I'm slightly jealous of that.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, I can see. I can see that why you would be jealous of
why,
that.
Why sex isn't it's pretty sort great. Of, yeah, well, you can just divorce sex and love and you can...
Yeah.
And I'm not saying you always do. I don't wish to
And also, I think
that.
It's really great when people have relationships that... started as sort of sex things and then they, you know, I think that's really, I like
beautiful.
That.
Yeah.
Do you have a partner, woman, girlfriend right now? How long has that been?
Off and on for 7 years.
And are you in public with her?
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. I mean, I'm public with, well, I mean, always with my girlfriends. Yeah. Yeah. And it's, I suppose it's, we've gone through a really interesting time. We've shepherded each other through a time of, becoming older, and so we face huge challenges. I think and perhaps me more than her, going, what is this and what am I for, and and we've had to accommodate that.
How old is she?
She's my age. She's my age. But we're just at that point where you think, do we want different things? Do we want? But we're grown-ups. That's what I love about her. We're grown-up people and we're very, very honest.
So you were like in your 40s before you even met?
Yeah, I was 42 or something.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I think that's a huge difference when you've been around the block a few times and you know your limitations and you know your needs and
we're
makes
incredibly
it much easier.
Honest. And I yes, hugely exactly. admire her capability to face down truth and for us to have very adult conversations about where we are and where we're at, and that I couldn't have wished to be at this time in my life around someone like her, because life gets tougher, and there's loss and complication and crises of identity and also the kids thing. I don't know if you guys feel that, but the not having had provides a kind of context for living that I don't have. So it's how you live without the family, or that kind of.
Because I've been reading about adoption recently, and it says even as a gay man, you need to be able to mourn that you can't have kids biologically. You need to think about that, and what does that mean, and give that space and stuff, which I'd never considered.
That's a really interesting thing. I mean, the social spotlight is always on women and as a childless woman but that's very true. As a childless man, that has an implication, however remote it may feel psychologically in the present. I was going to ask you, right, because we're all sort of playing therapist to one another in this sort of triumvirate.
I think that's what this podcast might be.
All great podcasts should be exactly that, ruminatory. But it's interesting that you were saying, London, and I'm coming back home to this sort of, this idea of the young me. But you didn't talk about Scotland in that way, and that's obviously your cradle. That's your.
Oh, I do think of Scotland. I just mean I
love Scotland.
I spent 10 years here in London.
I just say I got really super drunk about 6 months ago, and I direct messaged Nicola Sturgeon.
Did
and
you
I
really?
Said, when you achieve glorious independence, can I please come and be a citizen? And I thought, and as soon as I'd sent it, I thought, oh God, it might not have been my finest
hour. Did
she
reply?
She did. She said you would be most welcome. And
they
loved
so
her even
nice.
More for that.
I wanted to ask, people talk to you about cakes all the time.
Sometimes. They tend to talk to me now about why I don't do cakes all the time. And they're sort of sad that we don't do it, and why did you go, and what happened, and...
I mean, eating cakes.
Oh, there's some... I used to do just a gig, and I was doing a book tour, and people would bring cakes, and they would... The provenance was not established, so they would just appear from tinfoil, and there'd be slices of, so it had been cut. So, and I wouldn't have known the conditions in which it was cut. And then there would be... The thing is, when somebody wants you to taste their cake, there's just a... You can't say no. You can't. And then it's... and then you have to sort of publicly eat it. And then... And I'd always sort of say, but I'm not... I'm not a judge, you know. I would be the person watching the people watching the ovens. I was like sort of far back, telescope far back from that.
And also, but there wouldn't have been vegan cakes.
No, it was not vegan at the time. That's a latter kind of a latter kind of understanding of mine, a latter movement. But yeah, I'm really grateful for it now, all the dust has settled, because it just means, like today I just was pottering off to work and three people came and hugged me on the tube. And I'm quite huggy. I'm quite sort of benign, and I just want everyone to get along, and I'm sort of, it's
and
nice.
And it's because of the cake show?
Yeah, because they think they know me. It's like a shortcut, and I like that.
How do you know it's about the cake show? They say?
Yeah. Or something. It might sometimes be because of travelling. It tends to be if a lot of, sort of second, third generation kind of Indian kids will come up and talk to me about the Ganges, because I went on this big pilgrimage there and to the source of the Ganges, and it's this big Hindu pilgrimage that they want to make one day, so they'll come and ask me, and I'm like, I don't know, I'm not a very good Hindu, I'm a Catholic, but I'll talk to you about shit, and then you end up hugging, and it's, and I love that. I think that's one of the great privilege of my job, is I just get to be hugged and hug strangers.
Well, you told a lovely story, which is in that kindness vein, where, because when you first started Bake Off, they were trying to make it really intense on the on the contestants, right?
Yeah, well, they would just shove cameras in people's faces and go, why are you making this, you know, this marmalade loaf? The guy would go, it reminds me of my grandma. What happened to your grandma, Mark?
Oh, no.
And they'd cry. Cry about their dead family. And so where we resigned at 10 a.m. on the second day, and said, we were always resigning from everything. We just walk away. We glibly walk away. Meanwhile, there's a sort of collective sigh of sort of managers, agents, and, you know. But, it was really aggressive. And I suppose that was the vernacular in television at the time.
But you wanted to try and get tears.
Yeah, because it was X Factor. So I don't blame the production company. There's no judgment there. It's just, you know, that's how you do it. It's one of those shows. And it's just like, you know, Jeopardy, 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 ramp up all that crap.
Yeah, yeah.
And we were just like, no, we don't roll like that. We're never going to be the funniest people in the room. But we can really try to be the nicest. And it's such a thing, you know, nice has become such a sort of, you know, it's a disparaging word. I think we should co-opt it. What's wrong with that?
I know. Yeah,
well, be decent.
Yeah, well, that's...
Be kind.
Yeah. I love Harry Styles. And his thing
so beautiful.
His thing is TPWK, treat people with kindness.
Harry.
Now I love him even more.
And it's me like, too. Just be kind.
He's beautiful inside and out, isn't he?
Yeah, it seems to. He seems to be, yeah.
I've done stuff with him.
And everyone, so what have you done with him?
real jealousy there.
Not that violent,
a real other side.
Not that violent sex you were talking about, Alex.
Just a real whip pan of a head as well. Just like, what have you
done? I've got a bad neck.
Yeah, I know. And then I looking at you, looking at him. Woo! That was almost Exorcist.
But so what did you do with Harry? My future ex-boyfriend.
Tell him.
I directed a video for One Direction.
What?
Wait, you put that under a bushel.
And
are they all nice, or is Harry just the stellar...
He went round and shook every single person's hand on set when he left. Like, in the distance, was like, hi, I'm Harry, just want to say goodbye. Someone was up a ladder, hi, I'm Harry, just want to say goodbye. And there was no calculation. He just, I think, in order to, this is me completely guessing, in order to entertain himself living that weird job, he just went, instead of becoming insular, he decided to engage with everyone.
That's great.
And I just thought, that's really cool. And they're all sweet.
He has beautiful hair and a great way. Yeah. And I always think, good little kids, that I mean, he's stunning to look at, but I just think, God, oh, if he had a son like that. Yeah. That's how old I am now. It's just, he's like, oh, he's like my...
Oh, I'm still a like kid.
I know that. You don't need to... That was evident. From the very... Like,
I couldn't work that out.
Yeah. Really?
Like a wet pan on my neck. My neck's completely fine again.
And no, on that bombshell.
Harry is cured.
We need to get Alan back to the acupuncturist.
We have to get Harry to do this.
Yeah. Okay.
No, that's entrapment. Can I say that now that I'm in this? I'm not, you know, don't do it. It's a sex web.
Don't do it,
it's
Harry.
A sex web. They'll say they're interested in your biography. It's a sex web. Yeah, yeah.
They grab me by my Gucci frills.
Jungle Book
eyes.
Oh,
the snake eyes. Yeah. Well, Harry, you've been warm. Thank you.
It's hilarious. I think actually Sue said a really great thing, and just really the message of that I think we should be projecting out to the world. I think it was really lovely. She said, I think it's quite a gay thing. You want to be the dazzling butterfly that's outside and you want to be inside with everyone else. The moment I feel accepted, part of me wants to be transgressive. And I think that's a healthy thing.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's a healthy thing. I think it's something that we do. We are certainly at this stage in the history of being queer, I think we still have that. We have one foot in society that is, you know, accepting us and or tolerating us.
Yes.
And then we also need to feel that we have a special, we are a special band apart and we still connect with each other in that way.
Embrace our specialness. And also without the transgressive people who've made that, who've had that feeling and acted on it, we wouldn't be where...
I'm transgressive.
You
said, are you transgressive?
I try to be.
Yes. Hurrah.
Well, that's that then.
Lala's transgressive.
Always.
Yeah.
Now, listen, I want everybody to keep writing into us. I want everybody to stay in touch.
So please write to us and...
And how do they write us? How do they write to us?
They write to us going to the typewriter and going, hello at... Not the typewriter, the computer. Hello at... homosapienspodcast.com.
Correct. And if they were to...
Can you leave DMs on the Instagram as well?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
You can do that too.
It's only taken us 12 episodes to share that with people. But people do go off in the DMs anyway. So I feel like that's, a well-trodden path.
Yeah.
This is fascinating, isn't it? Mm. Now, if you feel like you need some sartorial brilliance...
Where would you possibly get some?
You'd go to alancumming.com. Ah,
that's so cute, because I was going to do your boring long one as a last conciliatory gesture.
Oh, I love it. So go to alancumming.com/shop and there will be Alan modelling the clothes.
And you can click on me and it takes you to everardbaths.etsy.eventbrite.co.uk/homosapiens/Chris.
Correct.
Pithy. What is it?
It's everpress.com/homosapiens.
Yeah, this has been so nice. I've had such a lovely time. I loved meeting all these lovely people. I've loved these little things where we introduce them and chat and do. I've loved being an agony uncle.
You've been brilliant.
I would just like to reiterate that I've only ever had two Valium in my life.
Yes.
But when I say I have a vodka soda and a Valium, I mean that as a metaphor.
Yes.
Let go.
And we won't put a number on how many vodka sodas you've had.
Oh, gosh. Well, just look up on that shelf the number of bottles of Arbiki vodka and gin.
I will finish this with a story that was probably... who knows if I should say or not. When I made you a vodka soda, do you remember? You know, I said, oh, I'll make you a vodka soda. And I made
in my house, in New York.
In your house, yeah. Uh-huh. And I poured the what I would consider the normal amount of vodka and soda into the glass. And then you came downstairs, you took a sip of it, gave me this look like, oh, for God's sake, and got the vodka and just poured into the glass. And I was like, I know we're going to get on. Yeah,
that's New York measures. There's a difference. So that's one of the reasons I like living in New York is the free hand.
None of that, it's the only reason I live there.
None of that mean little silver
thing comes out.
No, just like when I'm at Club Cumming, I put the ice in, mm-hmm. and then you go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 up.
Oh, wow.
And then you pour the rest of soda. And there's a tiny amount of soda.
Love it.
But, you know.
Start the engines, I say.
That's right. We're only here once.
Lots of love, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Powered by Spirit Studios.